Please pray with me. Take my lips, O Lord, and speak with them. Take our minds today and think with them. Take our hearts and our lives and set them on fire for your love's sake. Amen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Always been an assumption of mine that preachers who have for their Sunday readings texts like Psalm 23 have it easy. On Sundays when the readings are about hating mother and father, wheat and chaff, goats and sheep, the preacher longs for the green pastures and still waters where the good shepherd leads us and bids us take some rest. Today we hear that Psalm 23 that so many of us know by heart, or some version by heart. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. No wonder the church has picked up on the ancient image of God as shepherd. The resonances echo generation to generation all the way back through our collective memory, back into a time before church or temple or any comfort from buildings or institutions, back before Israel was a state or a place on the map, when there was only a band of nomadic people worshiping a God so holy his name could not even be put into language. The people did not know or understand Yahweh, the great I Am, but they did know what a good shepherd was and what a hired hand was who deserted the sheep. A good shepherd stays with the sheep, hired hand deserts. When they began to pray to this invisible God, using those ancient words, singing them, the Lord is my shepherd, the grit in their hands, the ache in their bones, revealed that very nature of God, because they knew those shepherds as protectors, helpers, guides, the watchers who neither slumber nor sleep. The good news we remember is that the invisible God chooses to reveal himself most fully in the person of Jesus, who had grit in his hands and an ache in his bones, that the whole world might know him and see him and know God through him. Jesus came as a good shepherd of the world, the one who knows you through and through, who sees you, loves you. This is not a far above God hovering aloof in some ether, but a God, as a child said, with flesh on, with skin on. The old spiritual says it well, what a friend we have in Jesus. But today in the Good Shepherd, reading from Psalm 23, I think there is another layer that we have to confront that's not as easy as this preacher thought. The good shepherd comes into a world with thieves who come only to steal and kill and destroy, as Jesus says a few moments earlier. But Jesus says, I came that you might have life and have it abundantly. So here's the tension. When you're God incarnate, when you're the Word made flesh, here's the tension you live in. Jesus' offer of abundant life got him killed because it agitated the world. It threatened the world that had become so attached to death's power. To heal on the Sabbath was to threaten death's hold on the world. For Jesus, there was no bad time to raise the dead. There was no wrong time to heal. But he was criticized over and over again for healing or blessing or forgiving or strengthening or encouraging on the wrong day at the wrong time. But for him, resurrection was always the right time. Always the right time. To offer the freedom of forgiveness was not a one day a week event. It was an everyday event. And when you embody that resurrection power as much as Jesus did, or as much as Peter did when he raises Tabitha, the woman in Acts we heard today, who rises from the dead. She was the woman who cared for all the widows. Not many people who did that. She was the caregiver. And Peter raises her up and empowers her. We don't know why, we don't know how, but we know that that power of God had been set free in the world. And it starts to raise people up, to empower fishermen like Peter to become healers and preachers and teachers. But death can turn on you. And that's what the tension is about in the scriptures today. Death turned on Jesus. But it only had hold over him for 2 days. The attempt to annihilate him didn't work. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Yesterday I took my kids to the zoo. We strolled down Giant Panda Lane. And the thought occurred to me for the first time in my life that a national zoo would be an effective place for someone to plant a bomb if they wanted to cause a lot of harm, get a lot of attention, and inflict a lot of mayhem. Instinctively, I felt myself reach for the kids, make sure they were close by. But then a portion of this Psalm 23 came to me in my anxiety, my visceral response to fear and intimidation. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for you are with me, God. Thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Now, we have a great police force and powerful military, but those thoughts were not a comfort to me. The thought that was a comfort to my anxiety and fear was one that came from a promise in a psalm. And then some version of the prayer book where it says, "For none of us has life in himself, none of us becomes his own master when he dies. If we have life, we're alive in the Lord. And if we die in the Lord. So whether we live or die, we are the Lord's possession." And the whole part didn't come to me. Just a portion of it, but the feeling of it did. And the peace and the comfort that came from that came out of Jesus as the Good Shepherd. Each of us this week, I imagine, internalizes the Boston bombings at the marathon in our own way, but the common truth for all of us is that we carry this news in our bodies and in our minds. We carry it in the way we get tense when we drive, or the way our shoulders pinch up in muscle tenseness. We carry it in the way that we treat other people, treat ourselves. We carry it in the tension that we feel. Our bodies absorb anxiety, absorb worry, and our minds do too, and we carry this news. We carry the shock and the grief of it, we carry the grit and the resolve of it, the anxiety and the faith that the Lord is our shepherd. So there are two accounts of the world today, and in Easter season they always seem to come up in such stark contrast. One account of the way the world works is that the power of death leads to hostility toward the neighbor, evokes greed and rage and violence toward others. The other is an Easter account that we hear about in the scriptures. And that account of the world is that the world is a place where the gifts of healing and forgiveness defy death, even reverse death, resists the power of death, transforms the power of death. How do we know? Because these stories, like the ones in Acts. In the Easter account of the way the world works, the Easter Lord invites an Easter people, that's us, to be about the defiant work of new life in a weary, spent world. That's Easter. Defiance. Defiance. So here's three things to defy this Easter. In the face of violence, we resist the cocoon. We defy the cocoon reaction in all of us to hunker down and ball up and close up shop and keep out and don't talk to that person on the street and don't interact with people not like yourself. We close up, we cocoon off. In Easter, we defy that. We resist that. We resist the combat reaction of fight or flight that we then need to put violence upon those people, the offenders, or whoever it is. In the gospel reading from John, Jesus says a remarkable and powerful statement. It's the very last verse here in your reading. The Father and I are one. It's this very powerful sense that if you see or experience Jesus, you see and experience the vastness of God in a person. The infinite and ancient of days is contained in the Word made flesh, this man. When you look on his face or feel him, you feel the very presence of Yahweh, the invisible God. And so there's this powerful statement there. The very next statement is that the religious people of the day grab a stone to stone Jesus to death. And it's not that they're Jews, which it says in John's gospel, or that they're Christians or Muslims. Doesn't matter. They're religious people in any generation. And they've been co-opted by death for this reaction of violence to someone who opposes them. And Easter defies that combat reaction that we have. We defy the desire to pick up a stone and stone the one whose ideology is different or whose religion is different from ours. The third reaction that we defy is that reaction to conform. Well, it's just the way things are. It's the way the world works. Sorry, it's just a downer. In the story of Acts, in the story of the gospel, Jesus enters in and it's never the way the world works. He wrestles the way the world works to the ground. God inserts newness. God surprises. God disturbs. There's a power that's been set loose and that no one has control over. It empowers those who are least, those who are not given the right education or come from the right part of town, and it's empowering these people. We don't conform to the world's despair and cynicism. We defy the reaction to conform. Today we can talk about heartbreak and death and name it without fear, because the Lord is our shepherd. We're committed to love our neighbor who is Muslim or Jew or atheist or Unitarian or Episcopalian, because the Lord is my shepherd. We can trust the power set loose at Easter to restore and heal and bless all the broken people and places, because the Lord is our shepherd.